And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another edition of Warrior Connection. Tonight we're going to be talking about the VA caregiver bill. Denise, are you there?
Yes, Doug, and we're ready to start. And before we start, I want to do two type announcements that we normally do. And out of all of the ones that I'm entering on TAPS, we do have a Gulf War Veterans TAP memorial page on Facebook, and I'm sitting here catching up. One of those things I have to take a break from every once in a while because it's very depressing. And I'm going to read one of the many names that I'm entering. And this one was a Marine that served in the Desert Storm, Edward S. Brodkowski, age 45, of Sterling Township, and he was born in Stanton. And he died, it doesn't say why, but he died and he was 45 years old, too young. And I've got others in their 40s, too, that have got to enter. And just too many are dying young, and that's one of the reasons we keep on with the program. I also want to announce to everybody out there that we have a VA Research Advisory Committee, Gulf War Illness Research Committee meeting, on October 28th and 29th in D.C. Now, we've gone over the problem with the VA RAC and how the Secretary of the VA is kind of taking over and gutting the committee. We're not going to have six of the committee members have been there before. And once they do their report, those other six will be going away, too. So we're very concerned. We hope that as many Gulf War vets as possible can get into town for this meeting, and also to allow time that we can go visit on the Senate and the House side so that we can go talk to them about the situation, push them for action. If we have to have a new legislative effort and have it independent, then that's what needs to be done. Our RAC was doing an excellent job in facing controversy since the start, and with this secretary, it's been particularly bad. And I've gone through that before on other programs, but put that down on your calendar, people. If you're up on the East Coast, you can make it a lot easier than those of us that are across the Mississippi on the other part of the country. October 28th, 29th, at the VA headquarters in D.C. We need to see you there. We need as many vets as we can to get there. Okay?
Yeah, Denise. And one thing that's important to bring up right now, and Rick Mays at the Army Times has written another story, but the VA Department of Veterans, you know, the congressional committees, the House committee.
Right.
They're getting stonewalled left and right by the VA trying to get answers to all of the problems.
Yeah, they are in an uproar up there. They haven't gotten reports from the VA like they were requested over and over again. There's a special Facebook page on those reports that are overdue. The claims backlog is going down, but I'm very concerned, and I want to look at the VA regional offices that are denying these Gulf War claims as we talk about it on Facebook and see people getting denied and other people getting accepted. We need to look at the VAROs, and we need to be complaining to the VAIG that those people are not trained appropriately, and the vet ends up having to either put in a notice of disagreement. If he's got new evidence, he can put up a notice of reconsideration, or he has to go through the appeals, and our appeals claims are going up because they're not doing them correctly. And so we need another program on claims, Doug. And
yeah, but, you know, we got to come back to the fundamentals, okay?
Yeah.
We're looking at over 300,000 Desert Storm casualties. We're looking at 500,000 from Vietnam era. I mean, the stuff is going up. We're looking at 1 million from Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom. And all of this is friendly fire. The casualty numbers are just skyrocketing. And the stonewalling of the VA to avoid responsibility and paying the bills is what the heck is driving all this.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, we can make all these appeals and everything, but we need congressional action, and we need incredible action to force the President of the United States to put the VA back under control and provide care to the veterans.
That's correct.
And I mean, we need to understand what the heck is happening here.
It's going to take going to the Hill, people. There's no ands, ifs, or buts about it. You have to go back to the representatives and the senators and make your voice heard very loudly. Now, I don't want to squeeze our guest out here,
Yeah, we need to go to that immediately, because this is all part and parcel of this whole thing and the caregivers need.
It's quite,
I mean, the number of casualties with severe injuries that the VA is unable to provide care for is just continually increasing.
Right.
And the caregivers, the family members providing care is the essential thing.
So we're going to go through the current situation. We have a Rebecca McCamick. She is a spouse of a Marine vet. And you know what's amazing? She's not going to need this now. They got their claim taken care of, but she's working it for everybody else. Everybody needs to stand up and do what we say at the end of the program about how you can help, because it takes every one of us. We can't just count on the organizations. We need phone calls by the individuals, and we'll get to that.
The organizations aren't going to help you. The veterans organizations are not helping, or they would be yelling and screaming at the top of their lungs.
Well,
okay, let's
we're going to get to that, Doug. Let's introduce Rebecca and move on with the information sharing, and then we'll get to that later in the show. Okay?
Yep. Okay.
Okay, Rebecca, are you there with us?
I am. Good evening.
Good evening. We're glad to have you on. We're just thrilled that we will have this also in our archives so people can listen, we can refer to it, and help you with your project. I call you the point person on this. And
well,
I want to know about the caregiver bill. What is it?
Well, I'd like to begin with thanking both of you for the opportunity to educate your listeners on what the caregiver program is and how it's going to help our veterans, and how what we need to do to assure the Caregiver and Improvement Act 2013, which we is known as S-851, what we need to do to get it passed so all ERA veterans can participate in the program.
Okay, so would you tell us about it?
Currently the program, it's offering benefits to the veteran's caregiver. And some of those benefits are training, ongoing technical support, counseling, CHAMP VA medical coverage, respite care, a monthly stipend, and reimbursement for travel and lodging.
Okay. So who's eligible for this?
Currently, only post 9/11 veterans, and the eligibility criteria, the first one is the inability to perform one or more activities of daily living. The second is the need for supervision or protection based on symptoms of neurological or other impairment. And then the third eligibility is other matters as the secretary shall specify.
Well, does that mean that if they have memory problems and you can't count on them to take their medications, to eat appropriately, or to even get bathed, does all that fall into this?
Yes, it does.
My goodness, that would be a very good help for the spouse or the caregiver, whoever that caregiver may be. It might be an adult child. You know, it might be another family member that is the caregiver, and that would be tremendously valuable. Does it help them if they need, you know, a break from the routine of taking care of somebody?
Yes, it does. Currently, in the law, it allows for 30-plus respite days.
Which means what?
Which means if the caregiver needs a break, needs to has her own medical issues she needs to go address, that the VA will allow someone to come into the home to assist with the veteran, or even also, say if the caregiver is going to have surgery, the veteran can be placed into a temporary situation.
Now,
such as a nursing home.
Who are the people providing the care? I mean, you know, we got the veterans. We got all the way back from World War II vets, Korea, Vietnam, Desert Storm, everything in between. We got Iraqi Freedom, Enduring Freedom vets that are in severe need of care. Who providing this care? Is this elderly parents, spouses, children, or the whole gambit?
It's a variety. We have children in there. We have spouses, relatives, sometimes even neighbors.
Wow. If anybody that would step forward and be certified as their caregiver and, you know, have the assistance they need to have the training, the support they need, and a stipend to help them, because they're giving up working and bringing home a salary. So there's a stipend involved too, Doug, that will help these families and to be able to keep them in the home. We're going to discuss some more of this as we go along, but can you give us the history of the bill?
Well, Denise, I would like to add also that the great thing is the veteran gets to choose who their caregiver is.
Right.
So the veteran doesn't have to worry about a stranger coming into their home. And the program is also processed on the veteran health side versus the veteran administration side, which the claims go through.
Uh-huh.
So the veterans are not waiting months to years for this program to kick in.
Okay, and this is different from the aid in attendance.
Yes, it is.
Can you explain that to the audience?
Well, with aid in attendance, it is processed on the administration side, so it does take longer. Sometimes you can get wrapped up into the appeal process. And it only what aid in attendance does is it provides a little bit of extra money, and I'm going to say roughly $600, for the veteran then to have to meet all those needs.
Right.
It doesn't offer the other benefits such as the caregiver being covered under CHAMP VA.
Right.
And with $600 a month, that's really limiting your financial ability to get your needs met.
And the aid in attendance only comes in a couple of days a week, as I understand it, and just, you know, basically what they need for their care. And that's, you know, under a separate division of the VA. So
correct. I think that's a separate program,
right,
other than aid in attendance also. I think that's an in-home health care program.
Right, right. I just wanted to make it clear that, you know, there's different programs, but this allows the caregiver, whoever that may be, to provide the care and not have strangers coming in, provide a stipend, and provide training and respite days, and that's very important. So, you know, maybe we ought to move on to the history of how this is developed. How did we start with the caregiver bill in the first place, Rebecca?
Well, the caregiver program, it came into place under the 111th Congress. And when they passed it, they knew they were leaving out pre-9/11 era veterans. But their intention was to come back and revisit expanding the program to all era veterans.
Okay, so that's where we're at now, is trying to get them to extend it. And that's what this bill would do.
Yes, so. Correct. And you can read in the current bill that was passed was the Caregiver and Veteran Omnibus Health Services Act of 2010. And in there, it states that no later than 2 years, the VA was to report back to Congress and let them know, was the program meeting the needs it was designed for, and was it feasible for the VA to handle expanding it?
Right. Because it's kind of discriminating, isn't it?
It sure is.
So, you know, what I think about is that I think, you know, some of the Vietnam vets would need this. Korean World War II, they're probably, you know, more so in a nursing home or the home situation that they're setting up so that they're cared for in a home, but a group of vets. So this is when there is a caregiver available that can probably physically handle the task of being the caregiver. So, you know, I'm thinking this is more toward the Gulf War and toward the Vietnam vets than anybody else. I think the Korean World War II might have already passed the time of having a caregiver, although I'm not ruling it out.
Yes, I know we're not wanting to exclude anyone from the program, and I just spoke to a Korean son, and he was his father's caregiver, left his career to take care of his dad, went years without health care insurance.
Oh, my.
And after his father just passed away, he's now, you know, he's battling his way back into the workforce, which he's been out of for years, so competing is an extra challenge. And he has his own health care issues because he's gone so long without any kind of medical treatment.
So we don't know how many this could cover, but it could be, you know, a very big help, and that's what we've got to emphasize, is that you cannot be discriminatory. We need to open the door and get everybody to be able to get into this program. One thing I'll say as a nurse, you know, and having had family members that were in a nursing home, I will tell you the cost is going to be much less to keep them at home, and especially with younger families, they have their father or mother, whoever it is, there in the home setting. You're not removing a parent that still contributes to the emotional well-being of the household, you know, and guiding and teaching their children. So, you know, I think, number one, the cost factor, although they, you know, said how high it could be, I think that if you compare it with what the alternatives are, this will be a cost savings. Am I correct?
You are correct. And I know the VA knows that. They did release the report. It was 7 pages. And they're estimating that this program is going to help about 70,000 pre-9/11 veterans.
That would be fantastic for those, each and every one of those.
Would be wonderful. And they know when you keep the veteran in the home with people that love them, you decrease the likelihood of secondary issues coming up.
Correct. I mean, if they're not eating properly, if they can't stand up to cook a meal, you know, and the wife is at work, I mean, there's problems here, and there's safety problems. I mean, they forget things and walk off from the stove, and it may be gas, and, you know, it can lead to house fires, what have you. There's safety issues that would definitely need to be considered that, you know, even if they have memory problems, PTSD, they would qualify, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
It seems like that we've got so many vets here, and the stuff that we've talked about, what we've seen, the people that have asked us for help to get medical care, we're seeing incredible numbers. We have serious neuromuscular deficiencies. We have incredible numbers, and I know a whole bunch where their memories are just basically, you know, rotted away.
I mean, and they can go out and drive in some cases. They get lost, and they're not safe. I mean, I know a lot of them that have given up their driver's license because they realize it, or, you know, they count on others to drive them.
Why did they, I guess, Rebecca, do you have any idea why when they wrote this bill that they put this arbitrary date of September 11th, 2001? I mean, that's got to be removed, obviously, and that's what the bill wants to do, but why is that arbitrary date there?
Well, I think the big issue was the budget. And then they didn't want to start a program not knowing if it was going to be effective. So they decided to take one era and start with them. And it was kind of considered a pilot program, but it's a permanent pilot program. And once again, their intentions were to come back and say, okay, VA, is the program working? Can the VA, is it feasible for them to help 70 more thousand veterans under this program? And the VA did report yes. Yes, it is working, and yes, we can do this.
Who does this fall under in the VA? Do you have any idea of the specific administrator or person, or is this another Shinseki thing that's all blowing up in his face, or what's going on?
I'm not sure. I know when I read the bill, it goes back to, it states it's up to the secretary of the VA, so I think a lot of this falls under what he wants to do with the program. There's a lot of leeway here in the bill.
Okay. Now, the bill was introduced in the Senate by Senator Sanders of Vermont, who is the chair of the Veterans Affairs Committee. It did go through the committee and get passed out of the committee, which it goes to the Senate floor next. Is that correct?
Correct.
And so we're still checking to see if Reid has scheduled it for a floor vote. Which would it would go to the floor of the Senate first and be voted on. And then if it's passed, it goes to the House. Now, there's no bill in the House, like a mirror bill, you know, exact same language so that we can work it in the House. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. So what do we need to do? Who do we need to call? How can we help every veteran out there, every family member, friend, civilians that want their veterans taken care of? And I know there's civilians out there that can help us with this effort.
Well, we're wanting to urge the House Committee on Veterans Affairs to mirror S-851. And I urge everyone to call that committee at 202.
Oh, hold on. Slow down. Let's go real slow on this. Call the U.S. the House Representatives VA Committee.
And the name is Samantha, correct?
Correct.
Okay, we're going to get in touch with Samantha at the U.S. House Veterans Affairs Committee, and she's already been getting phone calls. So what is her number? Very slowly, and repeat it twice.
202-225-3527.
Repeat
again.
Again,
Samantha's number at the House Committee on Veterans Affairs is 202-225-3527.
It seems like every time we turn around, and Denise and I and all of us, we've been involved in this for too many years, and I can remember growing up, my father was totally involved in this from the World War II and Korea War vets and got involved in it, you know, when I came back from Vietnam, continued to be involved. There's something seriously wrong in our nation. I mean, really, really wrong. I mean, we got all the reports that Rick Mace has done in Army Times, and Congress is reporting that the VA is stonewalling them on reports, stonewalling them on answers of what's happening. We got ineffective medical care being needed. We have thousands upon thousands, if not millions, of veterans all over the place. They need prompt and optimal medical care. And yet, it seems like every time we turn around, we're hitting another roadblock. And for me, it's totally frustrating because I don't see any of the American Legion or the VFW or DAV or AMBETS jumping up and yelling and screaming at the top of their lungs or getting even any of their members to yell and scream to help us.
Well,
am I missing something here?
No, you're not missing something. But Rebecca has really worked hard coordinating with the other organizations, and I believe all of them are in favor of this, Doug. Okay.
Then how do we get them to yell and scream and get all their members to yell and scream back to Congress?
Well, we get the word out to them that they need to publicize it. You know, what happens with the VSOs is they think they can handle it at the national level without calling out the troops to call out to their members and say, this is what you need to do to help us as the leadership in your service organization. They've never really done that, Doug. I mean, they put out reports in their magazines and whatever, but until you say, we need each of our members to do the following things, 1, 2, 3, you know, you just read it for information and you don't take action. So there is a need for that. There's only one organization I know that's kind of dragging their feet, Rebecca. Which organization is that?
That would be the Wounded Warrior Project. I know that they...
Well, isn't that wonderful?
They have made a statement that they would like to see some changes before expanding the program.
Well, I think they can make changes after they expand the program, is my feeling. But, you know,
it was really just lowering. It was lowering the eligibility criteria.
Well, it's pretty wide open now.
It is pretty wide open.
If you're in the VA health care and if you have a need in one or more areas, I mean, how more open can that be? I mean, you know, if a problem is rated, what, at least 30% is what you're saying? Is that correct?
Well, that's the lowest that I have seen someone say that they were in the program with. You know, the bill, I've not seen where the bill limits a percentage.
Uh-huh.
But I do know that, I mean, this program, it is extremely needed for our caregivers. Wounded Warrior caregivers, we're faced with so many other things that are unique, such as, you know, we become caregivers at a very young age.
Right.
We're dealing with multiple health issues. We're fighting multiple health systems.
You know, the Wounded Warrior Project, I just pulled it all up, okay? Steve Narduzzi is the chief executive officer of the Wounded Warrior Project. His compensation right now as the chief executive is $340,810.
Oh, wow.
You know, I mean, it's totally astonishing. And the other individuals involved in this are not been involved in real good ways to helping everybody. I mean, it's just totally astonishing when I look at their budget and their expenditures and figuring, okay, what are they going to do to help people?
Well, the Wounded Warrior Project, it does just focus on post-9/11 veterans, and they were a big part in getting the current program in place for post-9/11 veterans.
You know, the Wounded Warrior Project Board of Director, Don Hoffacker, Tony Principi, Anthony Odierno, Charles Abell, Charles Begdalia, Roger Campbell. We go on and on and on. I mean, it just...
These are the people we see ads on TV, and they're showing up on products, too, so companies...
And they have done a great job in making Americans aware that Wounded Warriors do exist.
John
and they
Hamry.
Are everywhere. They're in our grocery store. They're in our living rooms.
John Hamry's name shows up here, too, as Executive Vice President for Direct Response. Back in 1999, John Hamry signed a written order based on my request and everything to ensure medical care was provided to all depleted uranium casualties, and that's never happened. And, John, and Eric Shinseki signed it as a general way back in 1993. And I'm just seeing the same thing because I'm seeing names of people here that we have talked to and worked with before and that have promised us that they were going to get us medical care, and it hasn't happened.
And Principi was Secretary of the VA.
You and I met, you and I talked Principi personally. I remember that. He promised us.
Well, let's get back to what we need to do, because that's what we want to get out. Now, Rebecca.
That's okay.
Rebecca, we've mentioned calling the House VA person. I would also say that we need to contact our own representatives on the Hill and ask them personally to consider dropping the bill in the hopper, the exact mirror bill that's on the Senate side, and to find your representative. You go to www.house.gov. And you press on the little icon up at the top, representatives, and you'll either get a state listing or alphabetical. And you can find the contact for your representative. Now, you're going to want to call the D.C. office. D.C. office is the one for all these elected officials that handle policy, procedures, issues at the top. And so getting to them and getting past the receptionist that answers the phone to the veteran staffer is what you need to do. Now, that's on the House side, and the reason that we're trying to do that is we're worried about getting this bill through as quickly as possible so people can benefit from it. Now, we could wait on the Senate bill to come through, but we're losing time if we want to get this implemented quickly, so that's why you go after a mirror bill. Now, on the Senate side, if they get it scheduled on the floor for debate and vote, the Senate bill then goes to the House. It would be referred to the House VA committee. And we need the effort to let the representatives know that hopefully this is going to come, but if it doesn't, let's get a bill introduced on the House side so we can hit both chambers and make it go faster. But on the Senate side, I have to tell people, you need to get on the phone and call your two U.S. senators. And again, go to www.senate.gov, hit the icon for senators. Again, you'll get an alphabetical list or a state list. Again, it will give you the VA DC number that you can call. And again, you want to get past the receptionist that answers the phone and get to the veteran staffer of that individual member. Now, we don't have a lot of co-sponsors on the Senate Bill 851. That's the first thing they can do, is sign on as a co-sponsor. Support this effort.
Explain to everybody what co-sponsor means, Denise.
Co-sponsor means you have a bill. Now, what they're going to either do is they're going to say, I'll support it, I'll vote for it, or, yes, I'll consider put my name on the bill. Getting their name on the bill means they're all in, okay? You're going to have their vote, and you're going to have their support, and that's what you really want, is for them to show that they're willing to not only vote for this, but support it in a Senate or a House floor vote, that they're going to be able to be one of them that stands up and says, this is why we need it. We've got to take care of these veterans and their spouses or their caregiver doing this. That carries a lot more weight when they put their name on it. Not only that, Doug and Rebecca, when we get the vote and we want to, by, you know, name vote, a roll call vote, so that we know who supports the veterans and who doesn't. So when it comes time to elect, we know who to vote for. If they're not going to support us, you know, I'm sorry, as veterans, military people, friends and family and employers, if they don't support their veterans that they send to war, I'm sorry. That's one of the first duties of our country, is not only provide for defense, but care for the veteran after they leave the service and are damaged by that service. And that's why it's so important. And the other thing, Rebecca, I think we have to call Senator Reid's office to push him to get that to the Senate floor so we can get that vote. Is that correct?
That is my understanding.
Okay. Do you have the Senator Reid's phone number?
I do.
Would you give that to us and repeat it?
Okay. Senator Reid's telephone number is 202-224-3542.
Okay. Senator Reid, he kind of runs the U.S. Senate, right?
Yeah.
202-224-3542. Now, again, one of the things that I want to point out, calling the offices, you remember these people are there to help us, and we need to get their help, so we need to be extraordinarily polite, give them your name, address, who you are, what needs to be done, very specific and direct to the point.
Now, Rebecca, Senator Burr is the majority leader on the Senate VA committee. Has he supported this bill? He's a Republican.
Okay, he did make a public statement that he is opposing the bill because of the budget, and which you touched on before, explaining how this program, it saves the country money. And if you look at the current law in place, it was passed in 2010, they have the research that shows MetLife Market Institute, they're reporting that it would cost $74,095 a year to put the veteran somewhere else for care. And that is nothing compared, I mean, the caregiver program, that's pennies compared to the $75,000 a year.
Sounds like we need to also call Senator Burr and any of the senators that are on, you know, particularly the VA committee, because they're going to be looked to when it comes to a floor vote. So if any of your senators are actually on the Veterans Affairs Committee, it's even more important for you to call them and get them to co-sponsor, to get them to support us, either or. You know, I'd rather see the co-sponsorship, okay, because it puts their name on the line there.
Senator Burr is out of North Carolina, so our North Carolina listeners, I urge them to call.
Do you have that phone number available?
I do.
Okay, would you give us that number?
Senator Burr's telephone number is 202-224-3154.
Senator Robert Byrd, 202-224-3154, correct?
Correct.
We'll include that in the note on the archive of what people can do. When this program goes in the archives, it'll be open for people to listen to. It has a little description about what we talked about and what can be done. People, I will tell you, as one that's gone to D.C. and worked these bills, going door to door and having other people call, those phone calls really count. They really do. They will do nothing until they hear from their constituents, from their home districts, in their home state, that there is a big concern. We have to do that. Now, the other thing is you can email them, and we have some example letters out there. I know the National Gulf War Resource Center has got their letter out, and you can copy and paste their letter. The National Vietnam and Gulf War Veterans Coalition is also supporting this, and we have our letter out there. We're working really hard on Facebook on every page we can get. So you can do that first and then follow up with a phone call. But we really need to get those phone calls going.
The other thing, too, I want to point out here, too, I mean, I'm in a rural company. I can't use Facebook. Facebook doesn't work at all.
Right.
Could forget that for the rural areas. And, again, it's real important, and I'm going to take care of this tomorrow or the next day. If you have any talk radio shows in your area, find out. You know, if there's a morning or evening or afternoon talk radio show, find out what that talk radio show is and call the number very, very polite and explain to them what the problem is and what the needs are. But, again, this is one thing that we have to get out. Letter to the editor in your local newspapers. Okay, if you have a direct contact there, contact them. Send a very, you know, short, sweet, direct letter to the editor to get this out so we can get all the total care out there. Rebecca, do you have any idea of the numbers of veterans that we're talking about that need this caregiver bill passed for that would be eligible for care?
They are estimating 70,000 pre-9/11 veterans.
So we got 70,000 pre-9/11. Do they have any idea of how many are currently in the program?
Well, for post-9/11 caregivers, there is currently 10,000, and they are expecting 500 every month.
500 a month increase.
Yes.
But that goes, again, back to the backlog of claims that we're seeing, the incredible numbers of casualties we're seeing.
Doug, can we put out to have a call in if anybody has questions?
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have any questions, you'd like to participate in this, please, please call us at 888-874-4888. And when our producer comes up, just have him put right through to us. Please call us. This is absolutely critical.
Want to repeat that number, Doug?
888 874-4888. I guess, you know, I'm just seeing problem after problem after problem, okay? It never seems to end. I mean, Rick Mays is writing up the stories. The House VA Committee, the Senate VA Committee are totally frustrated with the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs right now on all of the I don't know, stonewalling and trying to get information on the casualties and what's happened to everybody and what care is being done, what's not being done. And the nation needs to wake up to this because, I mean, I got a phone call yesterday from my sergeant, my best friend, and part of our unit has just been alerted and put on activated orders to invade Syria.
Yeah, I was hearing that. But one of the things I want to mention is not only service organizations, but I've talked to Rebecca in the past, the children are back in school. There's parent-teacher conferences, parent-teacher association. If you can get the teachers involved and make up a little flyer that can be sent home and, you know, give them the information they need to help us, I think a lot of parents would do that, especially if they have anybody that served in the military. That's an excellent way. I think that we also have to approach, if anybody's been scouting, the parents of the scouts. You know, we need to reach out more to the civilian population. You know, this shouldn't just fall on the veteran or their family members to make these phone calls and be heard, because this is a national situation that we need to take care of our vets. Am I correct?
Denise, I agree with you 100%, and we have Veterans Day coming around the corner in November, and everyone will want to help our veterans in some way, and this is a great opportunity for them.
You know, they put yellow ribbons out, they, you know, go to the parade, this is something that everybody can do. It doesn't cost you anything except the short phone calls. And we're talking about two senators, Senator Reid, Senator Murray, that's four on the Senate side, two of your House of Representatives, and then your phone call to the House Veterans Affairs Committee to Samantha. I mean, we're talking about three calls on the House side, four on the Senate side. You can wipe that out in less than an hour.
And yes, we want to make sure we don't forget Representative Miller out of Florida.
That's correct. Now, would you tell us, is he supporting this? Do we know where he stands?
He, too, with the Wounded Warrior Project, made a comment that he wanted to make sure the program was currently working, which we now know it is. The VA was a little behind on sending out the report, and he also had a few budget issues.
Right.
It seems, is Patty Murray still in office?
Yes, she is, but she's no longer with the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee.
She's been a supporter of us all along.
Oh, yeah, and her father, if I remember correctly, served and had multiple sclerosis. So she was really in tune to the multiple sclerosis that was occurring, or even the multiple sclerosis-like, with the Gulf War veterans. And she was very attuned to it. In fact, she had the first, she had the hearing, and she was still chairman, and I was up there for that caregiver hearing on the Senate side. So I was there when I came to the hearing for the caregiver bill the first time around. And she is still very supportive, but we need people calling her because, you know, all these senators have their cohorts. And not only do they need to get on and co-sponsor, but they need to kind of get their buddies around them and say, hey, you're not co-sponsoring, and you know, they're going to be watching for election here. That's one of the things I watch for is, are they supporting the veterans? And if they're not, I really, you know, I may have to hold my nose and vote for the other person. But, you know, that is a bottom line. If our country cannot take care of their veterans, then don't send us to war.
Well, we keep sending us to war for no reason, time after time after time, and we keep coming back trashed. And I mean, we're seeing right now, we're seeing multiple generations in one families.
Yeah.
You got Vietnam vets, Desert Storm vets, and Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring vets, where we have vets in each one of these wars that within the same family that are totally trashed.
Right. I mean, we've got this for them.
And you know, Doug, our Desert Storm veterans, we still have young children at home that this is affecting.
Right.
Yeah, that's something we don't think about, do we? I mean, the veteran is so affected that they have to have a caregiver, and they still have children at home that they need to take care of. So who's taking care of the kids? I mean, where does the time come in? If they got a spouse or a family member taking care of them, how much time do they have to devote to the children?
And then our children, when the caregiver had to quit her career in order to care for the veteran, they've lost an income. These children are going without dental coverage, vision coverage. These are not sacrifices our children should be making.
That is exactly right. And one of my problems, and I find people call in to our program right now. Ask your questions. State your opinions. We need to hear from our audience. So, Doug, repeat that call-in number again.
888-874-4888. You know, we got the aid in attendance and housebound benefits, a special monthly benefit. Veterans and veteran and surviving spouse are eligible for VA pension may also be eligible for aid in attendance or housebound benefits, which increase the maximum amount, okay? And for 2012, 2013, we're looking at veteran without dependents. The maximum annual rate is about $12,000. Veteran with one dependent, $16,000. A veteran permanently housebound, no dependents, $14,000. A veteran permanently housebound with one dependent, $18,000. Veteran needing regular aid and attendance, no dependents, is $20,000. Veteran needing regular aid and attendance and one dependent is $24,000. And two veterans married to each other is $16,000. And then an increase for each child is $2,000. We're talking about if the spouse has given up a job and they've got no income, how is these families supposed to pay their housing bills, their fuel bills, their phone bills and everything else, transportation bills, insurance on this amount of money.
That's the problem, Doug. We can't.
And that's another thing I wanted, two things to bring up. We have a cost of living increase coming to a vote shortly, just so y'all know. And out on Facebook, we do have the thing to send an automatic letter to your senators and reps. So, you know, we have to keep up with the cost of living, too. There's many things that hit veterans. We're focusing on the caregiver bill today because we have people that were left out of the program when they started it for a good reason. I mean, you've got to get the program started, and they started with the youngest vets and those coming back from war with the biggest need probably, but not any more big than what the Gulf War or Vietnam vets or Korean War vets need. And so, you know, we've got to get on this. We've got to let them hear our voices up in D.C., and that means they have to have a huge response on those phone lines in their email system to get them to pay attention that we know about this, and we want them to know we know about it, and we expect them to follow through and do their best job possible for the veteran.
I think what I want to point out here, and again, I'm looking at some of the VA diagnosis, ICD and diagnosis codes, and this is, again, where we're looking at incredible problems. I mean, just with OIF vets, and I know the same thing with Desert Storm and Vietnam vets, the casualty rates, the diagnoses, I mean, we got serious cardiac problems in 21% of the veterans. We got respiratory problems in 26% of the veterans. Serious digestive problems in 36%. The muscular skeletal system, connective tissue, 56%. I mean, we're looking at incredible, horrific medical diagnoses affecting the health and safety of these vets. And, Rebecca, I mean, with these kind of medical problems that these kids are, these people are coming up with, and I'm saying a kid because Denise and I are, well, you know, we're kind of up there, Vietnam era all the way through. But these kids still have full lives ahead of themselves, and then many times they have still families there that have to take care of. But they have incredible, credible medical problems that are not related to bullets or bombs. And these are, I mean, it must be a nightmare for the caregiver trying to provide care to somebody that, you know, could leap tall buildings at a single bound run all day, and then they come back after a year, and now they have these horrific diagnostic medical problems.
It is, and we have been going 22 years without any relief. And, you know, we are pleading, please allow us into these programs. The majority of programs that ease some of the burden, we are excluded from.
Rebecca, you seem to be the charger on this. Can people contact you some way to get in touch with you to find out what to do specifically? Do you mind having a contact?
Sure. My email address is rmccamick@comcast.net.
Okay, let's do that one more time. Do you know how to do a phonetic, Renice? Can you help her with the phonetic? I couldn't hear it right.
Okay, go ahead, Rebecca, and say it. The first letter, and I'll give it the
R.
R is Romeo.
M.
Motel.
C.
C is... cat.
C again.
E.
C as in cat.
C as in cat. That's, you go. Go ahead.
So it's M C C A.
As in alpha.
M.
As in motel or Mike.
I.
As in India.
C.
C again.
C again.
Cat.
K.
K as in kilo.
At comcast.net.
Okay, let's see if we can repeat this again.
Okay.
R is in Romeo. M is in Mike. C is in Charlie. C is in Charlie. A is in Alpha. M is in Mike. I is in India. C is in Charlie. K is at kilo. At comcast.net, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I mean, we've got Rebecca God bless you. I mean, this is incredible. I mean, we're looking at one of the a radio show and a discussion here to beat all that we've had in a long time. Denise, thank you for doing this. Rebecca, thank you for your work. I mean, it's a staggering problem.
I know what Rebecca's going through, and I've been kind of keeping in touch with her and guiding her, having been working these bills since we came home. And people out there in the audience, let me tell you, it's not easy. You can't sit back and be on your couch and be a couch potato and not take action, because there's a handful that work these situations. We have, the VSOs that have their legislative offices up there. They try to help, but, you know, they get the bill going, and it takes the rest of us to pick up the slack and make it happen, and make it happen quickly. So maybe this can be looped in with the comprehensive bill that usually comes out right before Veterans Day. They always like to come out with a bill that covers veterans' issues right before Veterans Day. That's coming up in November. And so that's why the pressure is on. And the pressure is on each individual to do what we ask them to do. It doesn't take that much time of your effort, but that's truly showing us support for the veterans.
Denise or Rebecca, do you by chance have the White House phone number?
Well, we're not ready for the White House, because if we can't get it out of both chambers, it doesn't go to the White House yet.
But can't we get the president to put pressure on both the House and the Senate and demand action? Isn't he our commander-in-chief supposed to be taking care of the vets?
I know, but I think that's a wasted effort right now. I think we need to stay focused on what we can do to make a difference right now.
Okay, so ladies and gentlemen, if I'm understanding, this is really critical. We have Senate Bill 851 that Bernie Sanders, God bless Bernie, I think the world Bernie, that we need to get also into the House of Representatives. We need to get it passed out of the Senate. Then we need to get it out of the House. Okay? So, again, very essential phone numbers that you need to call. Senator Reed at 202-224-3542. For the House, we need to call Samantha at 202-225-3527. We need to get Senator Byrd totally involved, 202-224-3154. And then, Denise, how do they get in touch with their local,
their senator? Okay, to find the phone number or the email for your House of Representatives, go to www.house.gov. On that page, it has a icon up at the top that says Representatives. Click on that, and it'll either give you a state or an alphabetical listing. You can go to your state and find your representative to call. Now, to call your two senators, you go to www.senate.gov. Again, there's an icon right at the top that says Senators. You click that. You can pull down a state list. It'll give you your two senators and their contact info. And that's the way you find their contact info when you're looking to get in touch with them in D.C. And please, call them in D.C. Get past the receptionist to the veteran staffer. You're not going to get to the actual senator or rep, but you're going to talk to the veteran staffer that's fielding all these calls on that issue. So it's very important. Don't just stop at the receptionist. Be very polite and say, I really want to talk to the veteran staffer. And I leave him a message if he's not available. And then you leave your name and your phone number, your email. That sometimes works, too. But you want to get through. And the reason I shift at this point to going, you know, emails are great, do it. But when we're pushing to get something done, those phone calls help.
Okay, our music is coming up. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Senate Bill 851. Caregivers Expansion and Improvement Act of 2013, sponsored by the fantastic, incredible Senator Bernie Sanders out of Vermont. Ladies and gentlemen, incredible. Rebecca, can you come on all the time and give us an update as this starts working?
I sure can.
Denise, you can coordinate all that, correct?
I sure can, and I'm going to get her in touch with our other radio programs that we've been on, Doug, so that we can get the word out further.
Yeah, we need to get her on Joyce as soon as possible.
Yeah, I'm going to call one out of New York next.
Okay, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. God bless America. We got to work here. We got to help everybody. Thank you, Rebecca, for all you're doing.
Thank you.
Thanks, Denise.
You.